It's The Takeaway. I'm Melissa Harris-Perry.
I am Congresswoman Robin Kelly, the Congresswoman of the 2nd Congressional District of Illinois.
In 2012, Robin Kelly was elected to Congress. Her district, the Illinois 2nd, includes parts of Southside Chicago marred by what can feel like unrelenting gun violence. And she's been a champion of gun reform since the moment she arrived in the House. She now serves as chair of the Congressional Gun Violence Prevention Task Force. Way back in 2014, Representative Kelly released a gun violence report. And she told me just how much things have changed or not since then.
Unfortunately, things have not changed that much. As you probably know, we've passed pieces of legislation in the House that we can't seem to get passed in the Senate, universal background checks, closing the Charleston loophole so that it would be a longer period of time when someone wants to buy a gun that they can just get the gun, like what happened in Charleston. It wasn't a definitive no, so he was sold the gun, but then it came back a few days later that he should not have had the gun. So there has not been much change since that 2014 report. In fact, you know, the last couple of years, it's gotten worse in many places.
Indeed, this point about things having gotten worse, and, you know, over the course of the show today, we're really talking about mass shootings as we're marking the anniversary of Parkland, and we're thinking about mass shootings, particularly mass school shootings. But in fact, that's a relatively narrow view of gun violence.
Definitely, you're speaking to my heart, because I think that's the voice that I carry to Congress, that we always, you know, spoke about mass shootings, not that they are not absolutely tragic. And we used to do moments of silence. We'd stand up, sit down, then we would do nothing. And I, you know, brought to Congress, where I represent, and other places, people die every day. They may not die with anybody else, but it's someone's child or mother or father or cousin. And we never talk about that. We talk about it more now, you know, and that was one of the impetuses for mass shootings and for, you know, individuals dying every day on the streets. I call it a slow motion massacre.
Indeed, as you were saying, you know, we would stand up and sit down. And even as you said that, like in my head, I could see that image of you there with the late Congressman John Lewis sitting on the floor of the House of Representatives, because you all had gotten to a point where you're like, this must change. We must do something. And I can remember feeling at that moment like, ah, maybe this is finally it. But then
it wasn't. It wasn't it, because too often people don't even think about it until it happens close to them. You know, it happens over there when people say, I can't believe it happened in this area, but you can believe it happened in my area, but you can't believe it happened. But, you know, people realize it more and more, but basically we cannot get it passed. And it's not just about universal background checks and things like that. In the Build Back Better piece of legislation, we have $5 billion for violence prevention. And it was about investing in communities and neighborhoods and programs that are already in existence and proving themselves to be worthy and effective. But again, as you know, we couldn't get that passed either. But we're not giving up on it.
So talk to me a little bit about why. I mean, some of what you just described are things that public opinion polls have shown us for two decades, that the vast majority of Americans, gun owners included, by the way, I'm a gun owner, right? And across the ideological spectrum, across both parties, support. So what is it that's standing in the way of some of these very common sense basic measures?
You know, I do think that gun owners need to make their voices heard more. And just like the head of the Gun Violence Prevention Task Force is Representative Mike Thompson, guns are his hobby, you know, and there's other gun owners. Val Demings is, you know, on it. Benny Thompson was on it. I'm not sure he is anymore. These are all gun owners that believe in gun safety. And I think we need people like you. You know, my son is a gun owner. The people like you to speak up more and say this is important. In fact, the Gun Violence Prevention Task Force, we just went over a survey that gun owners who believe in gun safety, suggestions they have, you know, and it can't be, oh, they just want to take away your gun. You know, we have to relax people in that way. If you have your gun legally and you're not trying to hurt yourself or anybody else, have your gun, you know, but people just think that we want to take their guns away. We could never take everyone's guns away, first of all. And we want people to be safer with their guns. You know, if your gun is stolen, please report it, or, you know, things like that. Teach your children, you know, about gun safety, just a lot of different things. If you notice something, report it. Like when you think about the school shootings and all the kids that killed kids, and you mean to tell me the parents never noticed anything? Or the case that's just up, I can't remember which state it is, where they did arrest the mother and the father. Mm-hmm. We all have to do our part.
You know, it's an interesting point that with this kind of, these, I feel like these constant roadblocks around even the most common sense policy. I so appreciate the point you're making that, you know, responsible gun ownership is something that if you're a gun owner, you ought to take a lot of pride in and want to spread, right? Like, I'm mostly a gun owner because my dad was, we're very Southern. We're just very Southern, right? But there's also so much pride in sort of, you know, my children know how to use these weapons. We would never leave it unlocked or outside of a safe, right? You'd never leave it loaded. Like there's like the rules that you go through. Military families, for example, you know, may have firearms in the house, law enforcement families having firearms in the house, and taking pride in being careful and acknowledging that weapons like this actually shouldn't be in every single household.
Exactly. And, you know, I grew up in a law enforcement family in New York, and we had a mom and pop grocery store. And my grandfather had his rifle in the back of the store, you know, protecting his property. We climbed over that rifle every day. If you wanted to go to the bathroom, that's where the rifle was, and you had to climb over it. Never in my mind would I think about picking it up, playing with it, because we were taught you don't do that. You have to be responsible. And I guess that's the big thing that I don't want people to think, because we're saying we need background checks, we need this, that everyone's anti-gun, because that is simply not the case. Simply not the case. But we have to do better. We have to give law enforcement, ATF, you know, the tools and the resources they need to do the job. Like, people always talk about Chicago. Oh, you have the strictest laws. You have this, that, and the other. Yes, Chicago does. But the trafficking that occurs across state lines is horrible. The store purchasing, which leads to trafficking, is horrible. Most of Chicago's crime guns do not come from Chicago, or Illinois, for that matter.
Tell me about the Federal Firearms Licensee Act.
Okay, the Federal Firearms Licensee Act would update the U.S. code around how federal firearms licensees secure guns and prevent theft. It conducts inventory and record data for background checks. So just another way of keeping guns more secure, knowing inventory, trying to prevent theft in any way. And also increases physical security measures and clarifying standards around licensing for dealers, and increasing gun transfer record retention, so you know who you sold your gun to. None of this back alley or outdoor selling the guns, knowing who the guns are sold to. And the thing is, you know, we know when you buy a car, you know, where you bought the car from, you know, who you sold the car to. Just when you buy a house, you know, we track so many things, but, you know, guns have been carved out of so many things.
So as you pointed out, part of the unique voice that brought you to Congress was to represent those families and communities impacted by daily gun violence. And I'm wondering, as you talk to your constituents and others, if those communities feel invisible, or if they feel that they're being heard and that the losses and agony that they're enduring matters to other people.
No, they know that I'm out there fighting for them every day. I've become, you know, friends with so many of them, but also they do feel a great frustration. And some have said to me, you know, when a police officer kills one person, there's a lot of attention, a lot of, you know, there's marching, there's this, there's that, there's the other, as there should be. I'm not saying there shouldn't be. Mm-hmm. But when it comes to community crime on crime, you know, people cannot let that become normal. You know, a big deal needs to continue to be made you know, out of that also, we just had a press conference not too long ago, and, you know, listening to an 11-month-old got shot, and in the Chicagoland area, you know, driving down the expressway, people have gotten shot, and just on and on and on. And I know not just in Chicago has risen, and I'm sure COVID has, you know, something to do with the trauma people feel. But I think they feel, some people listen to them, they're very frustrated, you know, with some lawmakers, because they do feel like they don't care, you know. And if it happened more in some other neighborhoods, would that get attention? But really, I don't know. You know, it's just, it's become too normalized. It's become such a part of the culture, you know. I mean, when kids say they don't even know if they're going to live to 20, or they don't want to play in the park, people don't want to walk to the store, they don't want to walk to school because they're afraid, that's not right.
You're on the national stage. You are a member of the U.S. House. And you are also leading the Illinois Democratic Party. Talk to me a little bit about what it means to be doing leadership at a more state and local level.
Well, when I first got involved in government, it was the very local level where I live now. And I've actually worked on every level of government, the county. I was a state rep and a state employee. We need to pay attention to what's going on in the states. You know, I'm a Democrat, so we need to make sure we are paying attention and we're building the bench, not just, you know, about who's president or who's the senator. That is all very important. But who's your school board member? Who's your mayor? Who's your county person? Who's your state rep? That's very, you know, very, very important, too. And we can't lose people. You know, I want to welcome Democrats back home that might have felt ignored. I want to welcome young people, people of different ethnicities. I'm really trying to make the Democratic Party more open, more transparent, more present, more active, and let everyone know that your voice matters, your opinion matters, no matter what zip code you live in, whether you're urban, suburban, or rural. You know, we are truly all in this together, and I want to help people feel that way again so they stay involved.
Representative Robin Kelly, thank you so much for taking the time to join us.
You're quite welcome.
I'm Ira Flatow, host of Science Friday. For over 30 years, our team has been reporting high-quality news about science, technology, and medicine. News you won't get anywhere else. And now that political news is 24/7, our audience is turning to us to know about the really important stuff in their lives. Cancer, climate change, genetic engineering, childhood diseases. Our sponsors know the value of science and health news. For more sponsorship information, visit sponsorship.wnyc.org.